Welcome to the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast, discussing and analyzing the legal implications of national security issues across the globe. Our hosts, Hogan Lovells attorneys Michael Scheimer and Tim Bergreen, have decades of hands-on experience in national security issues and how they relate to their clients' day-to-day goals. And now, here are Michael and Tim.
Hello and welcome to the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast. Tim, it's good to see you again.
Mike, always good to see you, especially on a Friday afternoon.
We're joined by a guest today. Scott Lachlan is with us, is our co-lead of our Hogan Lovells privacy and cybersecurity practice. And we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence today. So just to kick it right off, you know, Scott, where are you working in the area of AI currently? What's sort of the hot topics in your field?
Yeah, sure. Mike, Tim, thanks for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about AI, which is an area where I think a lot of our clients are focused on today and are looking for thoughts and guidance. You know, I've been at Hogan my entire career for 18 years now. And, you know, one of the things that has been constant has been the changing technology and how technology is doing new and great things with data. And I think AI is just the latest example of that. My personal practice, I spend a lot of time working with clients who have sensitive data assets. Those could be in the nature of personal data. It could be in the nature of IP and trade secrets. It could be confidential information, but it's essentially the data that they really want to make sure that they are maintaining in a safe and confidential and secure manner. But they want to unlock the value of that data. And that often means taking new and innovative technologies and deploying it against that information to draw out the insights, to draw out the potential value that could be created from information that on its face is hidden. And so, you know, for a long time, we've been working with organizations in a number of sectors to the uses of AI and artificial intelligence and machine learning. And that has been part of my practice for a long time, especially kind of where you see the combination of sensitive data and new technology meet. But what I think has changed over the course of the past, you know, 6 to 9 months, especially with the wide release of ChatGPT and the popularity of it, is that the number of people and organizations in multiple different sectors are now looking at AI and recognizing some of the legal issues that come along with its use, and are now, for maybe for the first time, considering how to address the uses of AI in their individual operations, how to make responsible use of AI on a go-forward basis to not only protect against the harms that AI could produce, but also to make sure that we're harnessing the value that it could create.
Thanks, Scott. And we are recording this on Friday, May 5th, and yesterday, May 4th, the White House, under the leadership of Vice President Harris, held a meeting, I think, with several senior executives of some of the big tech firms involved in AI development, and also promulgated, I guess, some sort of guidelines or other sort of roadmaps for the government and the private sector to take. And I was wondering if you could fill us in a little bit on that and what that may mean going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a big emphasis at the moment for governments to try to establish what the right way is for organizations to use AI and how to try to address the concerns that AI presents. You know, in some ways, the United States is probably behind, you know, some of the other areas of the world on this. You know, I think much like data privacy with the GDPR went into effect in all in Europe, and, you know, we didn't, in the United States, did not have a comprehensive privacy law, still don't. And in many cases, that has resulted in the template that other countries around the world have used for their own privacy laws. And so you've seen many countries, whether that be Brazil or whether it's China or, you know, other large countries, have mini GDPR-like comprehensive data protection schemes. And the same thing is playing out right now in the context of AI, where you see really comprehensive set of regulations that are being proposed in the EU, having another set in the UK, And, you know, the way that we legislate here in the United States is not necessarily so big and comprehensive or forward thinking. Instead, we do things on a much more smaller scale with very specific sets of considerations in mind, especially looking at specific harms that technology create. And we go after those specific harms. You know, I think what you're seeing from the White House yesterday and in prior statements and with the FTC before that is thinking big about how AI should be regulated on a go-forward basis, even though my expectation is that the United States is probably going to be behind Europe and behind the UK in the development of those comprehensive frameworks, and is much more likely that you're going to start seeing AI-based laws similar to the one that you saw in New York City, you know, relating to HR-related data, or what you're seeing in California relating to automated decision-making. And you're going to start seeing AI be regulated in the same way that privacy is largely regulated in the United States.
So, and to pick up on that, Scott, so I interpret that as we see sort of state-specific privacy laws. There's no U.S. federal-wide privacy, you know, landmark law, which I think it sounds like you're saying is a little different to how the EU has approached these topics, for example, with the GDPR. So it's sort of a state-by-state approach. Is that where we're going with this then?
That would be my prediction, because I think the states are going to be in the position of being more nimble around AI and frankly, maybe a little bit more reactionary to the sensationalism that AI produces. As you're mentioning, in the United States, you know, we started after the Europe passed the GDPR, California was the first in the nation to adopt a privacy law that in some ways looks like the GDPR. In some ways, it's very importantly different than the GDPR, but it was similar in the fact that both of them were comprehensive in nature and covered a whole host of data, which was largely unregulated in the past. And then you started to see other states look to do something similar, and that, you know, went from Virginia to Colorado to Connecticut and Utah. And then even this legislative season, you're starting to see more states start to pick that up. And we've seen now a new law be adopted in Iowa, and we'll have one in Indiana and Montana. And I think Florida just went through their legislature yesterday. So you're starting to see this wave of states trying to fill in for the inaction at the federal level around data privacy. Full expectation is that the states will all be looking at AI and following a very similar playbook, which makes our lives, you know, trying to come up with uniform approaches to the uses and development of AI even more difficult.
You know, you were mentioning a couple of minutes ago about the Europeans and the British sort of being out ahead of us on setting legal regimes about the use of AI. And, you know, one of the concerns that we've raised on this podcast a couple of times in the realm of sort of national security policy is the need for America to maintain leadership in norm and standard setting globally. And, you know, obviously, I would expect that AI is going to be a field where, you know, there's going to be attempts, I would expect, to regulate and sort of govern the use of the technology on a global basis. And is that something that you see by our sort of lagging domestically, that we're potentially ceding leadership, whether it be to the Europeans and the UK, which, you know, is one thing, but, you know, possibly to the Chinese or others, which is something altogether different?
Yeah, 100%, Tim. I do think that, you know, when we are not able to move quickly in informed ways at a federal level to apply federal kind of nationwide standards with respect to these types of technologies, and other countries and regions are certainly willing to do that. And the thing about it, right, is that other countries have different sets of priorities, different value systems than, you know, we do here in the United States. And so when we cede over control and we cede over the ability of leading the way that technology should be regulated, we are also ceding over our principles and our values that are inherent in the way that we would want these technologies to be and regulated. So, you know, for example, in the United States, we very much are, you know, focused on trying to establish legal mechanisms to support innovation and to support ways that we are kind of safely and responsibly allowing companies to use technology to make their operations more efficient and to create, you know, new jobs and new businesses and new industries that didn't exist before. In some ways, you know, we've done that very successfully through technology, you know, through all of the big tech companies and internet-based companies, and that where the United States is very much the leader. However, when you look at what is the undercurrent with other types of AI-focused laws, it's not around trying to support innovation, right? It's not around trying to facilitate responsible uses of AI.
You know, and that raises a point I was thinking about that Tim and I have talked about earlier in the national security realm. When we think of AI in sort of the typical defense or intelligence meaning, it's historically been, I don't want to put them in specific buckets, but you know, one is things like autonomous drones or robotics and weapon systems. The laws of war are very consistently said there has to be a human, a man in the middle. There's no truly autonomous weapon systems, and nor can there really be under sort of the international laws of armed conflict. But the other bucket is something that is also commercially relevant too, which is the ability, as you put it, Scott, to sort of free up humans for other tasks. There's just vast quantities of data the U.S. and allied defense departments and intelligence communities now have at their fingertips that it's just not really practical for a human analyst or someone to review and look at. So you're leveraging AI to sort of crunch that data as much as possible in the last, you know, 5+ years or so, maybe kind of become almost a bigger deal, I would say, than like AI and the, you know, traditional, you know, Skynet Terminator robot idea. It's more about we want to be able to crunch this data. Part of that, though, still raises other concerns, too. Like, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Project Maven, which was became public a number of years ago, which is supposed to be the U.S. Defense Department's ability to gather tons of visual data for targeting for drone strikes. And that got public, and there was a bit of a big backlash in the engineer community, but it still exists. I think it's been transferred over to, and Tim will remember, I think it's the National Geospatial Agency, NGA, has now taken that on. But the idea is still to have sensors everywhere and to get all this visual data and then to sort of crunch it on the government side. So now we're kind of getting into sort of the surveillance and privacy concerns of national security, but also that's an AI piece. It would be AI would, in theory, crunch all that data. So I guess I want to open that piece up for discussion too, is sort of the use of AI when it comes into, I want to say, I guess, surveillance and imagery in the national security realm.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Mike. I mean, I think what AI is able to do that, frankly, humans can't is to be able to make sense and to find trends and correlations in vast amounts of data, which the, you know, the human brain is not able to comprehend or to compute. I'm, you know, reminded as that, you know, when we are thinking about AI as a technology, it's a little bit of a misleading term because these technologies are not themselves intelligent. You know, they don't understand what is happening in the same way that, you know, you think of like the Skynet and you know, Terminator movies. This is around taking a lot of material that already exists and then, you know, computing and analyzing that information and then providing that information back to you. And I think where we start to have concerns, it's not necessarily that the technology itself is creating as a problem. It's frankly how we use the information that's being provided, right? It's like any other technology. It's not that, you know, cars are bad for you, but if you drive, you know, 150 miles an hour while intoxicated, that is bad for you. And so in my mind, the real way of thinking about AI is it's not that the technology itself is creating these harms. It's instead how we are using the technology to do something which then is harmful. And that can be in the context of surveillance. It could be in the context of automated decision making. Could be in using the data, you know, which would have a discriminatory effect on, you know, marginalized communities. All of those things are possible with AI. It's just that AI is a tool that may result in those things itself, not necessarily going to be the thing that's going to surveil and identify who is bad and who's good.
That's a really sort of fascinating point that I think illuminates how this technology is really outstripping kind of the ability to cope with it legally and ethically, I guess. There's been considerable effort to ban, you know, the use of facial recognition technology in a lot of domestic contexts in the house. I know that it is in use at airports. You know, I imagine that, you know, as we just continue to move along the pathway, that sort of AI ML functions will just become more embedded in our daily lives. And, you know, we're going to have to figure out how to erect guardrails around those to make sure that we don't turn into Xinjiang. But I do want to come back a little bit to sort of the, I guess, the killer robot problem. Because I do think that there are people out there who are, you know, very seriously concerned about this. And I think that there is an inevitability, if you will, that once a capability exists to embed it in a weapon, that it will. And that the biggest challenge that a lot of militaries have now is sort of getting inside the decision loop of the opponent. And you see this in spades in Ukraine, where the Ukrainians are running absolute circles around the Russians, and they're moving, you know, five times as fast as they are. And I have to imagine that if the Russians were able to develop sort of an autonomous loitering weapons system that they could just fire up there, and that when it saw a target of opportunity on the Ukrainian side, would just take it out without that sort of Russian in the middle, that they would go ahead and use that. And I think that we do need to be sort of prepared as a society, and frankly, as, you know, national security establishment, for that eventuality, you know, and the eventuality that we may not be the first to introduce that technology into the battle space.
I mean, I totally agree, Tim. I would say that it's probably a kind of a double-edged sword in this one, right? Because you can imagine that, you know, AI and AI-based technologies in connection with military efforts could actually be quite valuable, right? So if you have a laser guided bomb that knows how to detect what a hospital looks like versus a military installation, and knows not to detonate if it hits the hospital, but knows to detonate when it hits the battlefield installation, you know, that could save a whole lot of lives, innocent lives, and thus, you know, that could actually be a benefit. Now, again, it's to me, it's all about the technology itself is powerful, but it means that we need to make sure we are using that powerful technology in appropriate ways, as opposed to saying the technology itself is bad or is going to result in all of these things, because there's a lot of great things that AI promises to do, you know, for our society. And it's only with our responsible uses of it that we can unlock that potential while trying to minimize, you know, the risks and the detriment effects that it could have. That, you know, one of the things, Tim, that I think that you're bringing up, and I'm interested in both of your perspectives on this, because I see that in one of the real areas is, you know, if you think about what I do on the cyber side, we are constantly looking at, you know, IT systems and computer systems and trying to identify where there are threats and vulnerabilities that can be used to compromise those systems, and where the safeguards that we have deployed are not going to be sufficient to protect against those things. And so the areas that I think that we're going to see with AI is very similar to what we've been experiencing on the cyber side for a number of years. And in particular, as organizations look to that, how powerful institutions are using AI, and then they figure out how to either game that AI or they try to manipulate that AI to then manipulate decision making. So, you know, an example would be, let's say you have a generative AI tool, which is being used by military officers to determine which types of attacks they're going to use on the battlefield. And, you know, they're effectively talking like it's a voice recorded or a voice enabled robot. Now, wouldn't it be great if an opposition to that was able to control the inputs that was going into that generative AI to then undercut the value of the, whatever the recommendation is that the generative AI made? And so, you know, similar to what we have seen within the past presidential election cycle with a lot of disinformation, and that being kind of being a big component of the national debate, my guess is that you will start seeing that disinformation start to play its way into AI technologies such that the real value of AI could be undercut if it's being trained on information that is incorrect or that is misleading or is in, you know, in a more malicious way intended to produce a certain result as opposed to having the result be made available through accurate information.
Right. And there's already sort of been incidents where these generative AI models have sort of come up with stuff that's like racist or offensive in other ways. And I assume that's because at some point it was exposed to, you know, that material.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Because it's not aware and it's not intelligent itself, it doesn't have the ability in the way that humans would be able to comprehend what information is accurate, what it's not, and how to eliminate, you know, areas of bias. And that, to me, is one of the big challenges in how organizations need to consider the development of AI, and importantly, how they need to be able to use AI. Because both of those things are, you know, separate. And most organizations are probably not going to be developing their own AI. They're going to be licensing that from somebody else. But importantly, how they use that information and they use that tool, they need to be making sure they're trying to address those harms that could come out of the use of AI. And the developers of them need to enable those tools to identify where those harms could be created and then establish the safeguards in place to protect against that.
So, like, for example, you're thinking of something where there's a bad actor, essentially, and if I'm using cybersecurity analogies wrong, Scott can tell me, but I essentially infect a data set that I know others are using to sort of teach AI to do a certain thing, and I can have a long-term either misinformation or misdirection campaign. As you said, you gave the example of something that could be being used to teach or to simulate things, you know, in a military or intelligence setting. I guess maybe that comes back to not only the controls in place, but where do you get the data that you're then training your AI model on? You know, is it open and out there for everyone to use? And is there a way for some attacker to infect it before you get it? Or I guess, you know, that's, and I've also heard this said too, and maybe you could comment on this also, Scott, is that, you know, there's vacuuming up huge amounts of data just to train an AI model is, you know, not necessarily going to make a lot of sense because it's one thing to train like a, you know, robotic assistant response type AI versus, you know, the things we're talking about in a military setting or for images, right? If it's, I'm trying to teach an AI to recognize images of cats, that's a different model than I want you to be able to recognize a different type of drones. So I guess I put that also into the group is sort of, where is the data that is, you know, being vacuumed up by AI to train it to do certain things and, you know, the possibility of someone corrupting that data, or what if, you know, what if an organization, whether it's the government or a company, had sort of a, and this might start to dive into sort of the different like ChatGPT and Bard and the other AI models, because I think some of these have been a little more open and others have been sort of a walled garden where you go, this is our AI, and not every, you know, developers aren't really sure what it was trained on.
I mean, I think that's right. And I think that'll be one of the areas, you know, where that there may be legislative attention to try to understand, you know, in the vein of transparency, where these tools are pulling information from in order to inform a decision. Likely, it's right. It's a lot of the data that's been used as data that is information is kind of like when people think of as public on the internet, the equivalent of like Wikipedia articles. And, you know, when organization or when these generative AI tools are using a whole bunch of data, again, they don't know which is true and which is false. They can make inferences based on the number of times that a specific piece of data appears on websites. You know, they could make inferences based on, you know, different types of user ratings, right? It can continue to get better, but itself doesn't know what's true or false. And that can be demonstrated if you ask one of these generative AI tools the same question five times, you're not guaranteed to get the same answer five different times. In fact, you often probably won't get the same answer, you know, every time. So the accuracy of the output of those tools is always something that needs to be questioned. Thus is really just a starting point, right? Just a tool to aid how humans were going to be able then to make a decision. Where we get into trouble and where all of these risks start to become much more concerning is when individuals cede over the ability of making independent, informed decisions based on experience, based on education, you know, based on expertise. And they provide that to the tool with no type of human oversight, with no type of safety checks, in which case, you know, they're not really making a decision. Somebody else is making a decision. And thus, there is no check and balance almost, or no ability of for us to actually determine whether this is right or wrong.
Scott, this has been a fascinating discussion. I've got two more questions. The first of which is, I understand that you also do a lot of work on insider threat, which is obviously something that, you know, can be mitigated, I guess, if you will, by artificial intelligence, but is an issue that we'll probably be discussing at some point in a future podcast. But I understand that you're planning to do sort of a more extensive video or audio series for clients and other interested people. And I thought you might want to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So appreciate that, Tim. I think, you know, one of the areas that I do in my practice is work with organizations and the response to insider threats. Insider threats are kind of a unique aspect of cybersecurity. We know that, you know, some sort of information is potentially being compromised. We know that maybe there's information that's being exfiltrated, but we don't know who exactly is responsible. It's not as clean as a, you know, a ransomware event where an attacker has dropped a note on your computer and says, you know, send Bitcoin to this particular BitLocker. We don't know who is actually doing it. It could be, you know, a sophisticated threat actor. It could be somebody at a vendor, or it could be Bob from down the hall who I golf with on Tuesdays. You don't know. And as a result, those insider threat cases can be really difficult to come out and address. And I think it really takes a multidisciplinary approach to try to go after it. Everything from, you know, traditional white collar investigations to cyber, to privacy, to IP, to employment. You know, the list goes on where you need these experts. And frankly, you know, AI is increasingly looked at as a potential tool to identify abnormalities or irregularities with workforce activity. So, you know, for example, having tools in place like DLP solutions or data loss prevention tools that are designed to identify when sensitive information is being emailed out of an organization, or when people are sticking thumb drives into computers to, you know, download data en masse. AI is going to be part of those solutions, and it creates a whole number of issues around employee monitoring and, you know, how those and what types of almost due process individuals have when they're being accused of these things. So what we're hoping to do is to pull together a video panel series to really dive into these issues, working with partners and experts across the entire firm as they provide their insight about how to address insider threat risks within their organizations.
Sounds fascinating. And then the final question, I think the one that really is on everybody's minds at the end of the day, which is, AI going to destroy humanity?
I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say that AI is actually going to help humanity. I do think that there is, you know, much like anything else, it's going to be messy. There are going to be a lot of problems that are going to be identified. There's going to be a lot of news stories that describe all of the pains that we're having as we embrace AI. But I am pretty confident in humanity's ability of trying to harness the power of this and use it in a way that's going to benefit us all while trying to, you know, reduce the number of harms that occur.
This is great, Scott. Thank you very much. And we look forward to the Insider Threat series. And also, I think we're going to probably also have a few more sessions on this podcast in the future on AI. We're going to return to this topic. And Scott, we'd be happy to have you on again. So thank you very much and have a good Friday.
Excellent. Really enjoyed it and looking forward to joining again. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Hogan Lovells National Security Podcast. To learn more about top 10 global law firm Hogan Lovells with more than 50 offices worldwide, please visit HoganLovells.com.